This is Pure Decking, show number 362. Almost said 632, but, you know, that didn't seem right. So this is about the show about things that interest me, like information security, rigging the game, and sadly realizing that I can do 60% of my job just in a Slack window. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Madman. What is up, Madman?
Nothing much. Drinking and doing an internet show.
Thank you, Captain Obvious. And we have, are you?
Well, favorite drink of the day, liquid from the sky. And wine of the week is whatever comes in a box and is cheapest.
I like it. I like it. That's why Slack's... Is Slack's ticker symbol really work, Psychros? That's fucking funny. I believe it. I'd believe that. He says it is. All right. Well, shit. I guess we should call it the IRC. In the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Psychros, Herrats, and Madman. So we try to do the show approximately 9 o'clock Central Time. We're on Freenode in the Galaxy 15 Radio channel. So hop on there. We're doing a show. Heckle us. Correct me. Whatever. I probably shouldn't be sitting here trying to assemble a fucking network server while at the same time I'm doing a show. So let me put this aside. And
proving you're halfway there. Multitasking.
Yeah, well, why not?
Next, the transition.
What? I don't know where that just went.
Only women can multitask. If I have to point out a sexist joke, it fucking doesn't work.
I just didn't get it, so sorry.
He's working on making you a tranny.
That's all right. 9 out of 10 women don't find me funny. Oh, God damn it. All right, back to the gutter. No more highbrow fucking comedy.
Gotta be careful with jokes like that, man. People believe that shit. Anyways, I mean, Tumblr itself started out as a bad joke, and now look where we are.
They only believe stuff like that because you can post it on several sites and then reference those sites as reference material for the other sites.
I love that. Isn't that fantastic?
Well, it's better than news reporters referencing themselves and future, you know, referencing their past reports for, you know, why, like as a scientific truth or whatever.
As I said yesterday, it's gone way too far when I make a politically incorrect joke in a place that's designed for that and get called out by the moderators for being politically incorrect. God damn it. I got banned from that site yesterday by IP.
How large a bag of nickels, Psychros? If it's a big enough bag of nickels, I'll do a shit ton of stuff.
When Yahoo bought it, they paid something like $40 million, and I think they just sold it. Verizon bought Yahoo, and I think Verizon just sold Tumblr for like $1 million. It's a massive write-down.
A lot of these clickbait places that are being sold are trying to turn their model around, and they're actually having their own reporters write hit pieces on their own bosses. Fucking nuts.
Oh, just trying to get the stock price down?
No, trying to
get them to stop.
Oh.
They don't realize that news media is meant to be for profit, not for virtual signaling. There's been quite a few stories written about how new media owners are battling with their own fucking news reporters to write stories. Like, one of them is a sports journal. And they were writing pieces on Trump and things like that. And the dude's like, we're a sports journal.
What are you
write
doing?
Write about sports. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? And next thing, there's a hit piece up about how phobic their new boss is. Like, the fuck? Yeah, and then they get fired. Wonder why. Anyway, I don't care.
I think that probably explains a lot, actually, because I was reading up about how you have to be really, really careful about letting people with social agendas get hired in into your company, because they will get their friends hired and make it very difficult to ever get rid of them. And their goal is not, you know, to be a good employee, help your company grow, make money. Their goal is some kind of nebulous social impact. And
we've seen a lot of that in the way the voter turnout in smaller districts in America, and how these radicals are getting voted in, because people just don't give two shits about politics. They're not watching it.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, man, somebody gets 10,000 votes from, you know, someone who's a crazed nut, and they wonder why they got elected. It's because no one else voted. That's I think a lot of this has happened.
I could see that.
We as a populace just stopped paying attention. I know that happened here in Australia. And it was only in the last election people went, oh shit, you know, this actually fucking matters. And the only people we've got to pick from are these guys. Damn, we better pick the best of the worst. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's how we felt in the last presidential election. So, I mean, you know.
I'm just worried that people just had enough of this turmoil and craziness, and think that if they vote for the one that's yelling the loudest, maybe it'll stop. Maybe all this crap will stop.
Oh, we all know better than that. It'll never stop.
Dude, that's all I'm worried about, because there is a lot of frustration out there. I mean, people are just sick of it. I mean,
so, what's the first story, Morps?
Well, the first story is from Ars Technica, and I have just discovered something interesting. After all my issues last week with the IRC, which I guess you all wouldn't know about.
I knew about it.
I wouldn't let me in. I told you about it.
I was trying to segue into a joke about nobody else being here last week, but you all killed
it. That's because we abandoned you.
Yep.
I already pulled my sick burns on that.
So,
but you did do a good show. I congratulated you on the 50 minutes.
Yep.
If it helps, I listened.
Yeah.
You know, 15 minutes of it while I was trying to log into the IRC.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Just got to have fun with it. So after all the fun I had with the IRC last week, I set up a Docker container on one of my servers to keep HexChat running, and it turns out I can't copy and paste into it from my current client. So I got to figure out how I'm going to do the links. Madman, you could copy them and paste them in, because I think you're in through Yeah, you hopped in through the web client, so you could do it, but...
yeah. Boom.
Boom.
One moment, and it will be in.
Excellent. So, this is from Ars Technica. Ring is asking police not to tell the public how its law enforcement backend works.
Oh.
That's encouraging. Amazon's Ring line of consumer home products or home surveillance products enjoys an extensive partnership with local police departments all over the country. Cops receive free product, extensive coaching, and pre-approved marketing lines, and Amazon gets access to your 911 data and gets to spread its network of security cameras all over the nation. According to a trio of new reports, though, the benefit to police go even further than was previously known, as long as they don't use the word surveillance. Gizmodo on Monday published an email exchange between the chief of police in one New Jersey town and Ring, showing that Ring edited out certain key terms of a draft press release before the town published it, as the company frequently does. Amazon is editing press release text for local municipalities at this point. What the fuck? I mean, that sentence alone should be a problem. Go ahead.
Say it is, but I think it's because the local municipality wants to be truthful and say we can look at your Ring doorbell whenever we want, and Amazon does not want that public.
Well, that's the honest answer there, isn't it? The town of Ewing, New Jersey, in March said it would be using Ring's Neighbors app. The Neighbors does not require a Ring device to use. Consumers who don't have footage to share can still view certain categories of crime reports in their area and contribute reports of their own, sort of like a Nextdoor on steroids. Law enforcement has access to a companion portal that allows police to see an approximate map of active Ring cameras in a given area and request footage from them in the course of an investigation. The town also launched a subsidy program giving up to 200 residents a $100 discount on the purchase of Ring security products. Members of the police department also received $50 discount vouchers for their own use. In other words, they're going to give people discounts to put the cameras in areas where they want them. The original draft press release obtained by Gizmodo showed that the town used one of Ring's pre-written press release templates and inserted a quote from the chief of police that read, in part, security cameras have been proven to be essential in deterring crime, and surveillance systems have assisted in closing cases that may have otherwise gone unsolved. Ring approved a version with that sentence edited out, telling Ewing police that the company avoids using the terms surveillance or security cameras because that might confuse residents into thinking this program requires a Ring device or other systems to participate, or that it provides any sort of direct access to user devices and information. Never minding the fact that, you know, it does. We want you to pay for your own surveillance and monitoring. We want to surveil you, and we want you to pay for the cameras.
We're going to give you a discount. We normally would charge you $250. We're only going to charge you $200.
Ooh, that sounds like a deal.
I'm glad I've been practicing being shut in for the last 15 years. It's going to make this whole surveillance thing real easy to escape. This is bullshit, man. So we literally signing ourselves up for a total surveillance state and then going to wonder how it happened.
Yep.
While we spend our $10 corporate gift card.
You're going to wonder why everybody has to walk around in anonymous masks to make it from point A to point B without just being harassed by whatever.
Okay, so it's not part of the surveillance network. So technically it's not law enforcement. So we could probably use it for advertising as well.
That's where I'm going.
Yeah, I unfortunately, I'm in the bus with you.
Because I could easily see between drones or directed advertisements through sound or whatever, you know, you're just going to have constantly being harassed by advertisements now everywhere you go. Because, oh, look, it knows where you are. We see that you haven't been to Starbucks in a while. You know, we see you haven't ordered on, you know, Taco Bell recently. You should order more Taco Bell.
They're just doing that with your phone.
And the drones won't go away until you do.
Do the Ring doorbells have any connectivity with mobile phones?
Yeah, you have to install an app if you want to view the footage from it.
Will it just shake hands with anything that comes into radio frequency with it?
No, it's Wi-Fi based, so you have to connect to it on its Wi-Fi and then get it connected to your Wi-Fi. Then it connects up to their server farm.
I can sort of see it, the next evolution of the Ring door phone connection thing. Hey, want to know who comes in your house, in and out of your house during the day while you're not home at work? Hey,
that's literally how they market it.
Wow.
Not only that, but you're expecting an Amazon package? Did you just recently buy a cell phone and decide to stay home from work and play with it? Then you can automatically let your Amazon guy in the front door by hitting this button on your Ring device.
Wow.
Yep.
So if you were home, it wouldn't matter. Minority you report, have to be at work. We're changing that.
Oh, yeah, rats, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right. The Minority Report ads, like when you're walking around and they're just constantly harassing you with ads. That's what it's going to be.
Do this and then throw in the red flag fucking laws, and you've got yourself in a total surveillance state. Hey, you're roughhousing with your kids a little bit too much on the front lawn. It'd be a shame if CPS would come around.
You should order more, I don't know, spam on Amazon, or CPS could be called.
I don't want spam.
Back to the article here. Police may not be allowed to use the word surveillance or security cameras in their marketing copy. That sentence right there. Police may not be allowed to use words like surveillance and security cameras in their marketing copy. What the fuck?
And that's kind of a misstatement on the author. They're suggested Amazon can't tell the cops what not to do.
Okay. But another pair of new reports highlights the significant surveillance capabilities Ring-branded security cameras can provide to law enforcement. Yeah, you know, it's not even... Okay, I got to stop right here. It's not even that fucking hard if you want to set up your own cameras that don't have to connect to the internet. I can't think what the project's called off the top of my head, but there's a Raspberry Pi... I'm pretty sure we've linked to it in Decking. There's a project that uses a Raspberry Pi as your server, and you can get some cheapy Wi-Fi cameras. They're like $30 a piece off Amazon. I've got a few. I haven't set them up yet. For non-tech people, it's not hard. It's literally, you install this Raspbian image, you run it, you get to it on a web browser, and you connect up your cameras. It's not hard. Wyze cameras is what I'm thinking of, by the way. I forget what the thing's called, but it's like, if you want to do your own surveillance system, like half an hour of reading documentation, Googling, and believe me, you could do it. It's not hard. Anybody could do it.
Part of what Ring's adding... You would still want from your system to be able to connect to it from the internet. Ring's whole pitch is you're away from home. Somebody decides to break in, you can actually pull up the image and tell them to fuck off and die and possibly scare them away before they kick in your house. They think you're home. It's not just a camera. It's the whole speaker and talk to the dude thing. So if you're trying to replace Ring, it would still need to, a way to... Your system would still need a way to talk to you when you're not home.
That's easy. Now I got to look up the project.
Well, you were just saying you could set up your own home cameras and keep it off the internet. It's like part of the reason Ring's popular is people actually want to be able to look at their house away from home. It's just I don't think a lot of these people want the cops to have unfettered access. To their cameras because...
No. But here's the thing. Okay, so it's called Motion iOS. And it'll work with... It's a Linux distro. It's meant for like Raspi and things like that. But yeah, pretty much you just need a Raspi and a webcam to set it up. But you could then easily do a VPN or whatever and get at it. Although Rats is talking about people in the IRC who are worried about running out of tape with digital cameras. So I don't know.
Well, and another downside, Ring is their outside doorbell model. They were also advertising nanny cams for a bit, so you can not only look outside your house at someone who's about to kick in your front door, or the Ring spotlight cam where you're looking around your yard. It's check out what's going on in your house. Is the nanny beating your children? Did someone get in the house? Has the Amazon guy actually left after he dropped off your package?
Or better question, is the nanny not beating your children and they deserve it?
Is the nanny not beating your children and they deserve it? Now, I'm fairly certain people bought those and they were all on the same system. So you pull up the Ring app and you're just scrolling through camera feeds in your house. Do the cops get all of those as well?
If they want them.
So, not only do you get to the outside closed-circuit camera of my neighborhood, they're also watching, I don't know, me watch the boys on the couch eating Cheetos.
Well, I'm sure once they pull it up and see that's what it is, they're probably very quickly changing the channel. But I work with a lot of people who have Ring cameras, and actually one of them got his car broken into earlier in the week. The Ring camera caught the neighbors horsing around in the yard. It caught all this other stuff, not the people breaking into his car. And so from what I gather from people who actually have them, you know, if I want to spy on my neighbors and see what people are doing out on the road at 3 a.m, a Ring camera is great. But if I actually want security, I need something else. because it never seems to actually catch it when like somebody's breaking into cars and shit.
Yeah. Does the article say what process the cops have to go through to actually get the data?
Well, let's see. Police, local police departments have asked Ring to share names, home addresses, and email addresses of everyone who have purchased subsidized Ring device. Motherboard, Vice Motherboard reported yesterday with some apparent success. Email exchanges and other documents Motherboard obtained from several local localities show that at least three cities, Ring had the capability to share a list of everyone who used a city subsidy to purchase a camera, theoretically to prevent homeowners from double-dipping. We have the names of all the people who purchased these. If you want to block these people, a spokesperson for Acadia told Motherboard that the city did not request a registry, nor has one been elsewhere in California. Motherboard found a Ring subsidy program contact. Ring device owners are often unclear on what information specifically police can see and how they can use it. The secrecy is entirely by design, CNET reports today, as Ring has a list of features its police partners are explicitly not supposed to share with the public. Documents, security researcher Shirias Gondal, I'm butchered that name, attained through a FOIA request include a communication from Ring to the police in Bentonville, in Illinois, saying that the neighbor's portal back-end features should not be shared with the public, including law enforcement, including the law enforcement portal on desktop view, the heat map, the sample video request emails, or the video request process itself, as they often contain sensitive information. Whoo! That's a lot! So they've got a heat map, they've got a sample video, a video request process.
User license? I wonder if they say the video belongs to Ring, then they don't need to get your permission.
Well, that's kind of what I'm wondering. Because you know what I'm not seeing in here is any reference to a warrant.
And if it's Ring's property, they wouldn't need a warrant.
Well, remember,
Ring's willingly giving it over.
They keep it all anyway. Remember a couple months back, Ring employees were getting in trouble for harassing homeowners using their footage to make fun of them. Okay. No one remembers that story?
Actually, I don't.
The actual employees were harassing other employees about, one-night stands and shit they were bringing home because they had footage of them coming through the front door. It was a story, man. We did about 3-4 months ago.
Did we?
Yeah.
That's fucked
Ring's
up.
Always been incredibly fucking sus, dude. Any of those products just really weird me out. Like, I get it, but you're giving up your privacy for safety. Fuck that. And it's not even a guarantee of safety. It's just a high-definition video of your fucking rape on your front lawn.
Well, now, to be fair, you can probably sell that shit to the right website and make a ton of money.
Let's face it, I'm not paying for it anyway. I'm just pirating your rape. Dude, I'm just saying. Like, would you allow the police to put a camera in your kitchen to stop theft?
No, because then they know home? How much I'm drinking, and I don't need anybody knowing that.
Well, that's it. They see what you're bringing through your front door when you go grocery shopping.
That's what the brown paper bags are for.
They're going to know what's in the brown paper bag.
Well, not if I bring in a lot of them.
If you have a box of brown paper bags, it's even more suspicious.
Oh.
I'm
going to need you to delete that footage of the boxes.
So we could do it like this. 8:45, Morps leaves home, Ring camera catches him, but goes to the local Kroger's or whatever, captured on video camera in the car park and via traffic cameras. Also, your mobile phone's pinging out where you are.
Well, I just got a new one of those, sure that's going on.
You go in, you get your groceries, you pay with cash, but you've used your rewards card, so they know exactly what you purchased anyway. Do you see where this is going?
But with the rewards card, I never registered it, so they don't know I bought it. They don't link it to me.
A rewards card barcode that actually comes up on the system as all zeros, and it throws an error every time, but it's a valid rewards card, so it's always fun to watch that because the system doesn't really know what to do with it.
But you can see where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah. No, total surveillance state. Total black bag. Like, Sir, that was hate speech on Twitter the other day. I don't even have a Twitter account. Well, we have an account we suspect has been attributed to you, and we're going to need you to come with us. And if you say no, we're going to ban your ass.
You've been watching this for X amount of hours on television, and on the internet, you seem to be going to these websites. We're starting to pick up a profile of who this man is. And then when they pull you in, okay, on the 14th of so-and-so 3 months ago, what did you do? And then you tell them what you did, and they go, you're fucking lying because we've got you here. And they put you in prison for fucking lying. The cops, even though it was just a
bad memory error. Or something, sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And don't say it doesn't happen, because there are a couple of men sitting in prison right now for that.
Oh, I wasn't about to say that doesn't happen. That's a common political tactic. Get an investigation opened up on your political foes, and even if there's nothing there, you can you'll still nail one or two people on process crimes.
Yeah, there's a general who lost his position here recently in the Trump administration.
Well, I mean, hell, they're trying to get Trump himself on that shit now. It's like, well, okay, no Russian collusion, but obstruction of justice. And it's like, I realized that, yes, legally, you can commit obstruction of justice without committing a crime. Or, without having committed the original crime. But fuck, it sounds weird, doesn't it?
The Ring camera captures audio, too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Yeah. How long before someone's prosecuted for a hate crime from a Ring for calling someone something at their front door?
Or worse.
This country a very long time because we don't have hate speech laws.
Okay, fair enough. Good catch.
Big problem is, though, in this country, it's not the government that's going to fuck you over for what you say. Let's say I say something homophobic. I make gay jokes. I don't actually have a problem with gay people, but I really love calling people fags.
Who doesn't? It's like a national sport.
It is, and it pisses off all kinds of people a whole lot. That's not social justice appropriate. So it's not that I'm going to go to jail. It's that my employer is going to get a video of me calling a bunch of people fags. And they're like, this dude's not customer facing, but we should really can him because someone's going to find out he works for us. And we're going to get a shitstorm of snowflakes piling on our company. And we don't need that.
Yeah, okay. That's a better way of rephrasing what I said.
I was actually thinking of you have people who've lost their YouTube channels and Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts for things that happened, quote-unquote, off-platform not too long ago. So how long before somebody starts losing all their social media profiles because there's a Ring video of them, I don't know, telling a hooker to give him a blowjob on the front lawn or something?
Negotiating price. Up.
So, anyways, yeah. Ring's scary. I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
I just don't like the whole idea of cops having unfettered access to the footage. Now, I should be able to give them the footage if I want to. It's my footage. But just here's everything Ring has collected. No, fuck you and die.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this is why you should build your own video surveillance system. You shouldn't. I mean, anything that's going off to a cloud server and you no longer control, especially with footage of your house and what, going in and out the doors. Because, let's take a slightly less dramatic example. They see the groceries I buy going in and out of a Ring, enabled door, and they see the amount of alcohol, and they're like, we think that's an unhealthy amount, so we've decided to alert your health insurance agency. And then I, get a note from my health insurance agency that my premiums just went up double because they think I drink too much. It's like, that's none of their fucking business. Well, I guess technically my health would be their business if it's health insurance, but you know what I mean.
It would be their business, but even just sticking with what it is, how much do you want to freely give the police? And it's not just, I'm a criminal and I want to avoid being caught. How much do you want them to just look into your life for no reason?
Every lawyer out there, every lawyer. What's the one piece of advice they always give you when it comes to interacting with the police?
Get a lawyer.
Shut the fuck up.
Shut
up and get a lawyer. The question isn't whether or not you broke the law. It's, did you break the law they're looking for?
Yeah, because you almost certainly broke a law. You just don't know what law.
And odds are it was a stupid one.
Well, they're called whim laws, but yes. So, anyways, you guys ready to move on?
Yeah.
I think we've drowned that horse.
Got into the weeds on that one.
Okay. Next one up is from DallasNews.com. Let's see. Rats is in the NRC is saying, what if doctors required you to have a Fitbit, and if you didn't work it out enough, you'd get in trouble? It's not the doctors. It's the health insurance company. That's what you got to be worried about. Because what's the doctor going to do? Tell you you're fat? You look at the doctor and say, yeah, I know. I've got a mirror.
You got a Fitbit, and you have to work out, get a dog, play fetch for half an hour.
Just make sure the dog is the one wearing the Fitbit.
Exactly.
I know there were some health insurance companies that were supposedly offering discounts if you shared your Fitbit data, and I think some of the auto insurance companies were starting to, you know, say we'll give you a discount if you put our black box in your car, but I don't remember anybody actually requiring it. Oh no, there was a company that was
black box.
There was a company that was only offering new plans if you wore the if you shared your health data from a Fitbit. Where was that? I want to say that was in like DC or something like that. Stasi movie. I don't know. Anyways, let's see. Yep. Next article is from DallasNews.com. Oops. Don't scroll that. Here we go. Headline, hackers breached 20 government agencies in ransomware cyber attack in Texas. State officials say they are responding to a coordinated ransomware attack that has affected at least 20 government agencies throughout Texas. The state's Department of Information Resources is leading the response to the breach, assisted by the Division of Energy Management, the department said in a news release posted Friday. With assistance from the Texas Military Department and Texas A&M Cyber Response and Security Operations Center, the Information Resources Department is deploying resources to those jurisdictions most seriously impacted, though the state did not specify where they are. Further resources will be deployed as requested, the department said. According to Newsweek, hackers have in recent years adopted ransomware attacks as a preferred extortion method, especially among municipal entities. By planting malicious code inside agencies' information systems, digital intruders are able to exploit relatively unsophisticated or out-of-date cyber defenses and inhibit computer access, the magazine said. Affected users are then asked to pay a ransom, almost always in mostly untraceable Bitcoin. You need to read up on how Bitcoin works if you're going to call it untraceable. It's not untraceable. It's completely traceable. It's unattributable. I guess nobody else appreciates the technical difference in those words.
No, I do.
To regain control of their systems. However, whether Texas officials had been asked to do so or not was unknown. In 2016, global ransomware attempts rocketed to $638 million from just $4 million the year before, according to SonicWall, a Santa Clara, California-based network security firm. Ransomware wasn't really an issue 2 years ago, SonicWall CEO Bill Connor said in 2017 Dallas Morning News story. It's a huge one now. It's in the wild. It's the wild, wild west of the cyber arms race. No, it's not. Because in the wild west, you were allowed to shoot back. At the time, the company has created a heat map of data hijackers, favored locations that show Dallas, Austin, Houston, and San Antonio in the crosshairs. Everyone knows that Texas is rapidly growing with new businesses, which means there are more companies to feed upon. Yeah, they're not going for the companies, buddy. They're going for the government systems, because the government systems aren't up to date. So, yeah, nothing really surprising here, but now they're starting to do coordinated attacks against, you know, large sets of networks. Although, since I've done pen testing myself, I can tell you, 90% of this shit is not, like, coordinated, targeted attacks. They're all attacks of opportunity. It's, they got into one system and figured out they could spread to 20 others.
Yep. This is an attack of convenience.
I just opened the link in the email. I didn't know it was going to do anything bad.
I have a web comic I use at work that I send to people where it's subtitled "The Guy Hackers Count On." And then it's, you know, somebody calling the help desk saying, "Hey, you know that thing you guys told me not to do? Well, guess what I just did?" It's like, and the fact that we're not allowed to recommend these people be walked out the door when you have one or two people who constantly do this shit. Yep. But I'm not bitter. No, no. I just, you know, have the prerequisite alcoholism for working in network security.
Has it actually happened where they've called up and said, "That thing you told me not to do, I did"?
Pretty much.
No, but you can see it from here.
I've had people throw absolute fits that we asked them to change password. So they changed it, you know, they changed the password and then immediately changed it back. And over the weekend, you know, they went through the trouble of figuring out that I have my system set up to remember the last 30 passwords you've entered because it's been a problem. So they changed their password.
So they did 31 times.
They changed their password 31 times to get it back to what it was.
Wow, dude, I'm not even mad at this point.
But they put it in the fucking phishing link. Got their shit owned. Got our own email servers banned from several of the major providers for a while for sending retarded amounts of spam because the moment they got into that account.
I only get annoyed when I'm told to change the password when it's the whole, "You've had it for X amount of time, change it." It's been compromised. I don't want to remember 34 fucking passwords.
Well, the only problem with that is, yes, if I knew that the password was compromised, I'm going to require you to change it. The problem is knowing that it's compromised. And I've got a story about that here in a bit, too. But, oh, no, I dropped that one because it was similar to another story. I dropped the story, but apparently Google has a report out showing that a lot of people ignore that. "Your password has been breached. Please change it." Pop up on Chrome.
But that's the legit reason to change your password. They know it's compromised.
Yeah, people apparently click past it.
I mean, I guess I could. You could be argued that the other reasons aren't, but I say they're shit or annoying.
There was a time where requiring people to change their password because you'd been using it too long was a valid request. That time has passed. Pretty much, if I get a compromised password, I'm not going to sit on it for months trying to sell it. I'm probably going to use it to get something that's actually worth selling. Because you go on any dark website, they don't give a fuck about passwords. It's like, what does that give me? I don't care. Just some random user's password. Hooray, I can send spam. Who the fuck cares? No, you better have something worth if you actually want to get some money out of a compromise. So that's why they go for the data or the ransomware, or they start doing things like, well, the big one they're doing now is they're trying to figure out who does the financial transactions. Then they'll watch that person's email for a while and try to send updated wire instructions. So the next time you try to pay your contractors for building, construction, maintenance, or whatever the fuck, you know, you think you're paying a company that you have a legit contract with, but you got a strange email from, or you got an email from them that didn't look strange, but told you, "Oh, by the way, we've changed banks. Go use this account now." And
nobody follows up.
Yeah.
Okay. Not enough people follow up, because I do know many companies follow up.
They should. Whether or not they do. Because, I mean, I've literally had people tell me, "I don't have time to do that." You don't have time to check and see if the wire transfer instructions you're getting are real. Are you fucking kidding me? It's like you get the one. My favorite is where they get the ones that are obviously Photoshopped. Like, literally, they took a PDF and put it into Photoshop and, like, you know, put the block over the bank account information, put a new one in there. And it's like, you didn't think that was weird? Yeah, no. You didn't think
the two different fonts were strange?
No, not really.
You didn't think the explanation written in Comic Sans?
Yeah, you didn't think that the fact that the email address that they normally use is their company name, and this one came from Gmail, wasn't a dead giveaway? Yeah, no, I didn't have time to check that.
That niggerkiller at gmail.com.
Well, I didn't assume it was you doing it, are you? I mean, I...
That one's taken. I don't have that one. No, it's a bit, yeah, it's spot the fucking obvious, right?
Right.
I have too much faith in humanity.
Me too, madman. It'll be my downfall.
Next article is from Ars Technica. Speaking of faith in humanity, let me just continue to destroy that for you. Man sued for using bogus YouTube takedowns to get addresses for swatting.
Wow, what a dick.
YouTube is suing a Nebraska man. The company, or you need a comma there. YouTube is suing a Nebraska man, comma, editors, for fuck's sake. The company says it has blatantly abused its copyright takedown process. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act offers online platforms like YouTube legal protections if they promptly take down content flagged by copyright holders. However, this process can be abused, and defendant Christopher L. Bradley did abuse it, according to YouTube's legal complaint. Bradley made fraudulent takedown notices against YouTube videos from at least three well-known Minecraft streamers. In one case, Bradley made two false claims against a YouTuber and then sent an anonymous message demanding a payment of $150 by PayPal or $75 in Bitcoin. Wait. if you decide not to pay us, we will file a third strike, the message said. When a YouTube user receives a third copyright strike, the YouTube account gets terminated. A second target was ordered to pay $300 by PayPal or $200 in Bitcoin to avoid a third fraudulent copyright strike. A third incident was arguably even more egregious. According to YouTube, Bradley filed several fraudulent copyright notices against another YouTuber with whom he was engaged in some sort of online dispute. They were shitposting against each other. It's okay, you can say it. We all know that's what was going on. The YouTuber responded with a formal counter notice stating that the content wasn't infringing, a move that allows the content to be reinstated. However, the law requires the person filing the counter notice to provide his or her real world name and address, information that's passed along to the person who filed the takedown request. This contact information is supposedly to enable a legitimate copyright holder to file an infringement lawsuit in court. Also, more good reason to lie on this. But YouTube says Bradley had another idea. A few days after filing a counter notice, the targeted YouTuber announced via Twitter that he had been the victim of a swatting scheme. Swatting, YouTube notes, is the act of making a bogus call to emergency services in an attempt to bring about the dispatch of a large number of armed police officers to a particular address. YouTube doesn't provide hard proof that Bradley was responsible for the swatting call, stating only that it appears he was responsible based upon subsequent events. But YouTube says it does not have compelling evidence that Bradley was responsible for fraudulent, or it does have compelling evidence that Bradley was responsible for fraudulent takedown notices, and that fraudulent takedown notices themselves are against the law. Section 512 of the DMCA says that anyone who knowingly materially misrepresents that content is infringing and a takedown notice is liable for costs they impose on both the accused infringers and the platform owners. Should be more than that. Should be some kind of punitive damages just to, you know, keep people from doing it. Well, this law has been on the books for more than 20 years. Good God, has the DMCA really been around that long?
Yep, I wrote about it in high school.
It's a fucking terrible law.
It banned Sharpies. I loved that.
Oh, yeah, that was my... I gave you that example. I remember that now.
Yeah, we were discussing it in, I think after a vampire game. But, yeah, I got to write an opinion piece on it.
Yeah, any tool that could be used to circumvent copyright. And one of the tricks was...
Scotch tape. Yeah, but yeah, go ahead.
One of the tricks was use electrical tape or a Sharpie to block out the data portion of a CD so that you could still rip it.
And I was thinking scotch tape for the old cassettes. Because they actually had the newer cassettes had a way of stopping you from recording them. Yes, I'm dating myself. I had a cassette deck for a while. But if you put tape over it, you could still record the cassette and make copies of it.
Well, sure. I mean, it was magnetic, so... But yeah. So... Well, let's take a break from destroying everyone's faith in humanity and go on to this article. This is from the next platform. Big Blue, meaning IBM, open sources the Power Chip instruction set. This is actually really cool. It has been a long time coming, and it might have been better if this had been done a decade ago, but with a big injection of open source spirit from its acquisition of Red Hat, IBM is finally taking the next step and open sourcing the instruction set architecture of its Power family of processors. So this is everything from the old Macs, and actually some of the Motorola chips were kind of predecessors to the Power architecture, kind of. All the way up through IBM's modern Power PCs. So Big Blue is also moving the open source Open Power Foundation, which it formed with Google, Mellanox Technologies, NVIDIA, and Tyen, to help create an ecosystem around the Power architecture 6 years ago this month under the administrative control of the Linux Foundation. So, yeah... in any event, if you have ever wanted to create your own power processor and was lamenting how expensive it might be to license technology from IBM, now is your chance. So pretty much, oh yeah, Rats is right. The GameCube had a power chip in it. But since this stuff's open source now, you theoretically could go grab any FPGA chip and program it to be a power processor. Might not be that fast, but you could actually do it. And this also means that a lot of other chip makers could start making power processors, unlike what happened with AMD and Intel, where, you know, you have the, you know, two companies basically making all of the modern x86 processors. Well, they're x86 compatible processors, I guess how you would classify that. With this thing being open source, you could have several chip makers come in and start making power-compatible chips. So I don't think you're going to see any short-term change, but this is almost up there with the with what IBM did back in the day with the IBM Compatible, where they put out the designs for a PC and you had everybody making them. You could suddenly have lots of different companies competing to make CPUs in a couple of years. That would be awesome.
As long as they stay with the standard format.
What do you mean by standard format?
Like, universal.
Oh, you mean like using the same chip socket and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, that's not even that big of a deal, because what you'll probably end up with is like boards like Raspis or other things where the chip is just part of the board. So you would just spec out what board you want. But
okay.
But yeah, you're right.
I shouldn't be talking about hardware. I'm not even up to date on it.
Well, I mean, there are different socket standards, right? So you're right in that you probably would see several different chips with several different standards, and it would depend on what you're doing with that chip as to which one you would want. And I think it is more likely you would start seeing processors just part of the main board at that point, rather than as something separate that you would socket onto it.
I don't think I'd want it. I can't talk on it.
I mean, I see where you're going with it, that you'd rather have more choice in what chip and what board you're using, but if there's that many different variety of it, I think you will just start seeing the CPU. You know, if you see this movement of people into the Power platform, because you're going to have a software stack with Linux, because Linux already has support for the Power stacks, they've even done an implementation of the old Amiga operating system on a modern Power chips. It's as expensive as balls to build one, because I looked into it. But the Amiga OS 4 runs on modern Power architecture. Not to mention IBM still has a whole collection of software. About the only thing you don't have for the Power chip is Windows. So
yeah.
But if there were enough people buying power hardware out there, you know Microsoft would port it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then with Linux becoming more game friendly, Windows might just lose what a lot of people stick with Windows for.
Well, I also wonder if it's even going to matter as much anymore because you have so much stuff moving into cloud processing and remote systems that, you know, yeah, sure, you might be running on a Windows desktop, but if you're doing all your work, you know, all Windows is doing is giving you a gateway to get into, you know, all of your other systems. I mean, does it even matter at that point? Any thoughts on PowerPC versus x86 architecture? You know, I'll be honest, Rats, I don't think I know enough about the differences in the architectures. I know that PowerPC is more risk-based, so it's more of a reduced instruction set than x86, but I don't think I know enough about it to really talk knowledgeably about it.
You can get into performance arguments again. Those kind of died when Mac went to Intel's processors.
Well, I mean, because that was a real thing, though, right? Because if you go look at the speed ratings of, like, the old Power Mac G4s and G5s, you know, they're not running at the same speeds the x86 chips were, yet they were still getting a lot of performance out of them. Of course, the operating system was completely different and different architecture and all that, so... I mean, you're kind of comparing apples and oranges, but at the same time, you're not because they're still doing the same thing. But that's the old joke that the best Mac, when they're talking about the old Apple stuff, was an Amiga. Because apparently, because the Amigas used the same Motorola chip as the early Apples, and there was an emulator for the Amiga, and apparently it was crazy fast compared to the Macs. So... But I'd just like to see more competition in the space and more people making PowerPC compatible chips so that as opposed to having two makers to pick from, maybe you have like, I don't know, how many companies license ARM chips, right? So there's several different companies that do chip fabs now. You know, if you had five or six companies out there competing making different power chips, that would be awesome because one, you'd see prices go straight down. But you'd start seeing new things like competing instruction sets, kind of like what you saw back in the day between Intel and AMD. But that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. It just means that you'd start seeing a lot of growth very quickly in some of these different chips. And you'd probably even start seeing where you would have systems that would support having multiple processors of different architectures for doing different tasks. Because maybe somebody will come up with a chip that's better for 3D renderings, like your graphics card. Or maybe you'll have somebody come up with a chip that's better for different kinds of math. And it might not be weird to have a machine with three different processors just soldered on the main board, so it's not like you can change them out. But, you know, one is used for doing different graphics work. Another one's doing your network management. And maybe a third's doing your actual math on the back end. You know, that kind of shit where you get into these different tunings where you have multiple, because modern operating systems support multiple processors, right? But usually they expect them all to be the same architecture. I think that would be the next jump is where you start mixing and matching. Does PowerPC have ARM-like power? No. PowerPCs are actually kind of power hungry, but that's also because they've been tuned for servers for the past, I don't know, several generations of the chip. So I don't know. I'm kind of getting a little bit out of my element, so it's getting beyond what I know about. So I don't want to go too far because I start talking out of my ass and I don't know any different. So I don't know enough about it to answer the questions. But IBM's long journey to opening up the... Let's go back to the article here. IBM's long journey to opening up the power architecture began a long time ago, starting with the creation of the PowerPC alliance between Apple, IBM, and Motorola back in 1991, just as Big Blue was starting to get serious about the power architecture for RS-6000 Unix systems. Unix was all the rage then. And then some microsystems and Hewlett-Packard were circling IBM's proprietary mainframes and mini computers like starving wolves with a very lean and hungry Oracle Starling behind. That is such a strange, lean and hungry Oracle. That is such a strange sentence to say in this day and age.
Well, he had to prove he went to university.
Behind the scenes, IBM was preparing to move its proprietary AS400 enterprise systems to a common hardware platform with the RS6000. A credible Windows server was years away and would very briefly run on PowerIron. And a young Linus Torvalds had just created the first Linux kernel, which would be key to keeping PowerIron. Okay. History is long and complex. Same time, the Motorola 68000 series of chips, or the heart of Apple PCs, as well as myriad kinds and untold millions of embedded controllers. ARM may rule the day in controllers today, but Motorola was the I'm skimming the article at the same time. They're basically just going through history right now. But yeah, the modern power PC is basically descended from the Motorola 68000. Huge oversimplification. Nobody crucify me for that statement, but that's kind of true-ish. But then again, x86 chips also have some, you know, stuff in the Motorola chip, you know, that descends from the Motorola chips. But then again, it also descends from the 6502 chips, which is like what was in the Commodores and the NES and the Game Boy and shit. So, yeah, let me see if this article gets good anywhere. No, history. In addition to all this, IBM's running a soft core model for primary, say. So yeah, they've open sourced the chip instruction set, but not all of the protocols and methods. Let's see, here we go. Some work needs to be done to reduce the number of communications methods and protocols that are being employed to link CPUs to each other, to accelerators, and to storage. GenC, CCIX, CXL, OpenCPAI, NVLink, Infinity Fabric, the list keeps getting longer and the differences between them are disruptive in a bad way. We need one or two standards, maybe, okay, blah, blah, blah. This is all opinion. But basically, IBM has taken this instruction set for PowerPC, power processors, not even PowerPC anymore, it's just power processors, open sourced it, put it in control of the Linux Foundation. Are we going to see anything immediately from this? No, but a couple of years from now, I'm really hoping we start seeing some actual competition again. I mean, we're starting to see it between AMD and Intel again with the Ryzen chips versus the modern Core line. But I'm hoping we start seeing it with something even challenging IBM or the x86 platform and maybe moving into a new stack. And it looks like Linux is going to be the base of that instead of Windows and DOS. So it'll be interesting to see where this ends up in a couple of years. Or, it'll be Plan 9 and nobody's ever heard of it and nobody uses it. But I'm hoping that's not the case. Because, I mean, for fuck's sake, there were companies. I think it was AMD that. No, it wasn't AMD. Who bought Cyrix? It was VIA that bought Cyrix just because they had managed to reverse engineer the Intel 8080 chip and had unencumbered intellectual property when it came to making an Intel compatible processor. So, yeah, I'm hoping we see multiple companies competing on making these power chips, and hopefully we get a real viable alternative for x86 on the PC hardware. Next, anybody have anything on that?
With a new architecture, they'd need to start writing programs that would actually be compatible with it, right? Because you couldn't just use Windows or anything on it.
Sort of. You wouldn't actually need to rewrite the software directly. You would need to rewrite the compilers. So, because most software is going to be written in C or a C-like language or something else moving up the chain, very little of the software is actually written in direct machine language anymore. To make something compatible with the power chip, you would just need a profile. You would just need an instruction set and a profile, a compiler that knew how to take the C language code or C++ or Java or whatever, and run it on that instruction set for the power chip. So as long as you had a compiler that could compile into the correct bytecode for that chip, you could take software that you wrote for x86 and cross-compile it over and see if it works. And in many cases, it probably will. It probably won't be very well optimized, but it'll probably work, you know? So in a lot of cases, it'd be something where you start off with just getting a compiler and see if your code works straight up, and then go fix the places where performance isn't right. Or things don't work correctly because an instruction set it doesn't work quite the same way as an x86 instruction set.
Okay.
So it's not quite like you're starting from scratch. This is one of the reasons why you see Linux cross-compiled for all kinds of... You know, go look at all the different architectures that Debian supports. You know, they've got PowerPC in there for the old, like some of the old G4, G5 stuff. They've got ARM builds. They've got several other processor builds, you know, things you'd never heard of in there. And really, it's because somebody's made a profile for that processor in the GCC compiler stack, and somebody was able to get a kernel to work, and so Debian decided, cool, we'll do a spin for it. Now, I think they're a little bit more pragmatic about what spins they do anymore, but at one point they had a ton they supported of different builds.
The reason I was asking is it might not be a super apt comparison, but I thought they might end up the Windows Phone route, where it might be a good product, but because no one's putting out software for it, it dies.
Possibly. I think in a lot of cases that they would have to do, I mean, it's not just going to be compile it for the other processor and you're good. There's going to be optimization that has to be done. There's going to be things where, you know, you've written the code expecting certain variances in timing based on this instruction set or that instruction set. Because, you know, modern processors have insane amounts of microcode in them. So you might be threading expecting a certain kind of instruction set to take a certain period of time. And the power chip, it's going to take a different period of time, longer, shorter, or whatever, but you're going to find things that don't line up like they used to. So there's going to be a lot of work to get something ported. I don't want to downplay that, but it's not going to be starting from scratch, you know what I mean? You're going to have to take the engine apart, and you're going to have to machine some parts to make it fit. But you're starting with an engine that already works, and you're just taking it apart and remachining it. You're not building an engine from scratch. Although, if the architecture is different enough, it might actually be better to start from scratch. I think that analogy works. Maybe it might be breaking down.
It could, but they are already being used in servers, so it's like they have a market to work from or expand from, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not starting. You know, they've already got a Linux build that works on the power chips. They've got several different software stacks that already works on them. So it's not like they're coming out of nowhere on the thing.
You think they'll just be expanding server market, or could I be using it at a home build, playing Metroid?
I'm hoping to see it as a home build. You can buy. They have power chip mainboards and processors that you can buy now. They're just absurdly expensive. In fact, was it Tech9? Shoot, I think not Tech9. One moment, I'm trying to remember who was running it. But yeah, there are. I'm totally blanking on the YouTube channel now, but shoot. Level 1 Techs, that's what it was. Level 1 Techs did a review of a Power Linux workstation. And, you know, the thing was like $5,000 to build. But, yeah, the Talos workstation, that's what it is. So let's just see. You can go to Raptor Engineering because you can get this stuff now with the current builds, but now it's getting cheaper. So let's see. If we go to Talos, because Raptor makes one, the Talos 2. The Talos 2 secure workstation, $6,000. And the server's about the same. They've got a desktop development system at $5,000. They've got an entry-level developer system at $3,000. I don't see any of these that you would just buy on a lark. You'd have to have some serious reason for doing development on a power system to spend that kind of cash on it. But
okay.
You can do it now. So what I'm hoping is with the open source system, you're going to start seeing more options for getting a board that doesn't cost $3,000 to $5,000. You know, because I can go on Amazon right now and get a laptop for $150 running Chrome OS that I can do work on. But if I want a power system, you know, it's either that or like, you know, a used car.
So, the used car, all the firearms I've been shopping for, a motorcycle.
Yeah, I mean, it's not cheap. So that's the problem right now, is that it's not financially accessible to anybody who's not got a serious reason to be doing development on power architecture. Because even the Amiga stuff that was running PowerPC, those things are still a couple $1,000s to get into. Like where people were like cloning the Amiga 500 on a modern power chip and shit like that. It's just not worth getting into. Not unless you have a real reason to be doing it. So, anyways, next article is from Gizmodo. Chinese official ironically says state media should not be restricted on Facebook and Twitter.
I agree with him. But it is still ironic that they're saying that, seeing how they want to restrict Facebook and Twitter to everyone for everyone else.
So we can just read this article real quick here. Facebook and Twitter are blocked in mainland China by the country's censors, but that hasn't stopped Chinese state media from using those same social media platforms to spread propaganda about the protests in Hong Kong. And Chinese officials are not happy that both Twitter and Facebook have started to crack down on government-run accounts for spreading disinformation. China's foreign minister, Jing Shuang, expressed his displeasure with the situation at a press conference in China on Tuesday. It's reasonable for Chinese media to tell the country's story via overseas social media platforms, and I don't understand why some companies or individuals have such a strong response. It's because the information hit their weak point, the foreign minister said, according to a state-run media outlet, the Global Times on Twitter, ironically enough. Facebook announced on Monday they were removing some accounts that had been engaging in inauthentic behavior, following reports from Gizmodo and BuzzFeed that Chinese state media were even buying ads to spread disinformation about the protesters in Hong Kong. Facebook identified 936 accounts linked to the Chinese government that were deliberately and specifically attempting to sow political discord in Hong Kong. Twitter also identifies fishy behavior from the Chinese government, which it was attempting to shut down. Based on our intensive investigations, we have reliable evidence support that this is a coordinated state-backed operation. Specifically, we identified large clusters of accounts behaving in a coordinated manner to amplify messages related to the Hong Kong protests, Twitter said Monday. Foreign Minister Jing said that the Chinese students living overseas and other Chinese nationals living abroad have the right to express their opinion on social media, but those accounts haven't been affected by yesterday's crackdown on propaganda activity. Instead, U.S. social media companies have been trying to respond to the recent surge in activity from Chinese government social media trolls who tried to depict the Hong Kong protesters as violent and out of control. Well, they did shut down an airport. 936 confirmed rats. Oh, right. Yeah, I was trolling when I said that. Some Chinese students at universities in the UK and Australia have been able to demonstrate against the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong, and the footage of those rallies is being broadcast around the world. The pro-Beijing students often taunt counter-protesters, asking why they need to cover their faces, a precaution for political dissidents who may be concerned about cutting-edge facial recognition technology. Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens when you're doing unpopular speech. let's see. Xinhua News, the largest state-run media outlet in the world, posted video to Twitter today showing the taunts of pro-Beijing protesters. Xinhua previously bought ads on Twitter to promote its content, but Twitter banned state-run media channels from purchasing ads in a new rule announced yesterday. The video posted by Xinhua claims to show violent protests, but the footage is relatively tame, all things considered. An estimated 1.7 million people from Hong Kong took to the streets on Sunday to demand more autonomy from China, and there were no reports of any violence between police and protesters. Hong Kong was formerly a British colony, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. yeah, China's upset that they're getting their troll accounts blocked. But
the sound of no one disagreeing.
Yep. Anybody have anything else on that, or do we move on to the last story?
Not on that. Facebook might be doing something somewhat laudable as far as correcting some mistakes they've made.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They had an outside research group kind of comb through their policies and several of their decisions over the last few years and determine where some biases were coming in. And they issued a report on how to correct it. Now, Facebook hasn't actually implemented any changes yet, but they could. They're actually looking into it and saying they're going to. They just haven't done it yet. So if they do, Facebook could be one of the first social medias to at least become more transparent on why they're kicking people and banning people. And possibly become less ideological in their process of kicking and banning.
As long as they're clear on what the rules are, that's all I ask.
Now, no actual changes have been made, but they've taken what would be the logical first step.
Okay, cool. We ready to move on to the last story?
Yep.
It's from the BBC. Millions are using 123456 as a password, security study finds.
Completely secure. It has numbers in it.
Millions of people are using easy-to-guess passwords on sensitive accounts, suggests a study. An analysis by the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre found 123456 was the most widely used password on breached accounts. The study helped to uncover the gaps in cyber knowledge that could leave people in danger of being exploited. The NCSC said people should string three random but memorable words together to use as a strong password. People tend to pick like quotes and shit that's obvious. So even though if you're doing traditional character based brute forcing, it's high. I mean, you get back into what would basically be a dictionary attack where you take all the popular quotes from Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and all that other stuff, and you're still going to get a whole chunk of passwords. Or and various religious books. That'd be another good one to throw into that mix for building your passphrase dictionary. So
that's why you go with memorable quotes that aren't in the pop culture. Like, the house is haunted by the long dead memories of many chocolate chip cookies, which I'm slightly misquoting on that.
Madman, don't go telling people your password.
Hey, in the spaces, they're special characters.
We all know that you're using exclamation marks, man. Come on.
I switched careers. They're now dollar signs.
Good to note. I'll remember that. If I ever need Madman's password, I'm just going to reference show number 362. I've been drinking. Anyways, Yeah, you know, I don't even need to finish the rest of the story. It's obvious shit. It's just like, guys, come on, don't use shitty passwords. Or even better, set up multi-factor. It's not even hard anymore. You know, yeah, the whole SMSing you a code is not the greatest multi-factor, but it's something. Anything's got to be better than using 123456. The problem is anybody who's using the password of 123456 is also going to be the last person to bother setting up any kind of multi-factor, unless you force it on them. And then they're going to bitch about it being forced on them. And why do I have to use my personal cell phone for this? You know, you all should be providing me a cell phone if you're going to make me use multi-factor. And yeah, anyways.
And then will the account support it? Because a lot of the things I really want to be secure
aren't.
I'm not in control. Like, does your bank accounts do multi-factor? I can't tell the bank that I'm doing business with to do that. Well, I can. I just can't force them to.
Yeah, it is pretty frustrating when I've got video game accounts that are more secure than my banking apps.
Yeah, I've got multi-factor on like 3 different video games. That's sad. Kind of hilarious, but sad.
I've got nothing else on this. Want to move on to Dojo, or does anybody else have anything?
I do want to say for a little bit, my WoW account was a valuable asset.
Well, you were actively
selling. It's depreciated.
Weren't you actively selling characters at one point?
Oh, no. I never sold a character. I own all the ones I've ever got up to anything worth doing. But whenever...
Who's doing that then? Wasn't somebody in the group actively selling?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if I want to say it on air, but...
Yeah, don't. Yeah. It's fine.
Don't, man. They ban it even...
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, whenever Burning Crusade was at its height, I could have sold my account and bought a house, and I should have. Well, I just didn't know how valuable it was.
Yeah. Well, I remember right before I bought that house, I think it was you and a few other guys you know were coming over. Actually, it was right when I bought that house because you guys were coming over to help me move stuff. And I had WoW going, and I had that sound system on the computer at the time. And you guys heard the Lich King coming up the stairs. It's like I don't want to say his name on air, but, he got freaked out by it.
Like, oh God, someone triggered the raid. I'm not at my keyboard. We're going to die.
Do you have anything before we end up in a whole bunch of WoW jokes?
No, I have nothing.
Got two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. They are both open data sets. One is vastly going to be more important than the other. And I'm not certain which one would be more important. It might depend on the individual. The first one I have for you tonight is the GeoCitiesArchive.org. This is somebody who grabbed the entire archive off of GeoCities and posted it with a search engine. You can search image tags, site URLs, and body text. So if you care about all this crap from early 2000s, late 90s, that was on GeoCities. Or, you know, you're just looking for, well, according to the front page here, random pictures of people with guitars. there you go. But, yeah, it's all of GeoCities set up with an index. You can do a deep search on it, URL or body. You can search, you know, all of it. So, search by keyword. Of course, number one right now is Area 51 of all things. But
they're still planning the raid, dude.
Are they really? They're all going to get shot. It's going to be fucking hilarious.
Oh, it'll be an amazing Monday morning.
So, yeah, if you're looking for old images of GeoCities or text or... I honestly don't know what use that would be, but like I said, depends on the person. Second open data set I have for you tonight is from CERN. opendata.cern.ch. This open data set is basically everything that CERN can publish freely, they have, and you can just click through. You know, they've got a search box, but then they've got stuff you can click on where they've got, you know, like you can click into software. Well, I want to look at the tools. Software tool. What we got? CNN Pixel C producer tool. Example tool using machine learning and track reconstruction with CMS Phase 2 simulated data. Software to extract the event display format from the CMS data set. Okay, maybe this stuff isn't all that useful to me, but it's interesting to dig through. And again, it's open data sets. So if you're curious about what's been going on at CERN, you want to see if there's somebody working there named Gordon Freeman, maybe, for example. Yeah, it's an open data set, so it's certainly worth your time to explore if that's what you're into.
CERN, do they run the large Hadron Collider?
Yes, they actually split the universe in two, you know, back when they first turned it on. That's how you ended up with the Bernstein and the Bernstein Bear universes.
Okay, and I'm in the one where Donald Trump got to be president.
Yeah, we're in the unstable one, Madman.
Hey. Look at the bright side. You could be in the one where Hillary Clinton got to be president.
I think I hit the wrong sound effect on that.
No, it works.
No, it worked.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, CERN's open data sets. But that's all I've got. So anybody have anything on the open data sets before we close things out?
Ooh, do a search. How many micro black holes have they created?
Black hole. Let's see. Simulated data set categories. There's actually several responses when you search this thing for black hole. CERN detector event. They got several CERN detector events. Is a muon neutrino interaction. Character set. Because they've got a type classified as black, so it probably returned everything when you search for black hole. But, well, I don't know, man, why don't you dig through there and let us know if there's anything we should be concerned about.
Okay. I know they're also making antimatter. It's going to be a while before we can pilot a starship.
So, anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, approximately. Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. How are we looking for IHN this weekend?
It was canceled due to rain last week. We'll see what happens this week.
Fair enough.
It's on a to give a fuck basis at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a whenever we feel like it kind of schedule.
Exactly. I can't really say, like, because I'm going drinking Saturday night, so we'll see how I'll pull up on Sunday if I don't feel up to it. Buck, we'll play video games again. You know, I don't know, Madman, you working a double this week?
No. This is the first weekend. I'm having the entire weekend off in a bit.
So we may get around to it. And follow it up with a bit of shots fired Chicago police scanner. It really kill that liver.
Oh, I switched to beer when we're playing that game.
I know, it's too dangerous. I've become a fucking statistic of the Chicago fucking shootings. But here in this, yeah, it doesn't really make sense. But somebody will make the connection in the news media.
That's true. We've hit 83 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Had to get up and get more water.
Show's gone long. Notify the affiliates.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's either yes or it'll show up if it's not, if it hasn't started within the first 20 minutes, then we're not doing it.
Fair enough. Madman, closing thoughts.
Not only is there a summer shandy, there's an orange shandy, and it's delicious.
Are you closing thoughts?
I have no... A shandy? What the fuck?
So it's a summer beer.
Lemonade and beer. Is that what you're calling a shandy?
Kind of.
Okay. I'm good with it then. I'm done.
Oh, all right. I think I've already read the closing blurb, haven't I? I've been drinking. I don't know what the fuck I've done. Did I read out the IRC? My more
yes,
sardonic psychros, her rats, and madmen. That's all I got tonight. So I'm just gonna start hitting buttons.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Shut up, Wesley.